Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the program, we'll talk about political polling. Ohioans who follow the polls may have noted the two polls taken in recent days show Barack Obama with a double-digit lead over John McCain in Ohio. Two different polls show Obama with a three-point lead, in effect a dead heat between Obama and McCain. What could account for these differences? Well, these and other issues in public opinion polling this hour with a leading national expert in political and public opinion polling. Fritz Scheuren is Vice President for Statistics at the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago. Welcome to Columbus at Open Line. Fritz Scheuren, good to have you here.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for letting me be here.
Well, we're at 614-292-8513 for questions about political polling. And you can email questions and comments to openline at wosu.org. Fritz, we had an Ohio newspaper poll. The University of Cincinnati and eight Ohio newspapers combined. They polled 886 likely voters between October 18 and October 22nd with a margin of error of 3.3 percentage points. They called it a dead heat, 49 to 46 for Obama. On the other hand, the Quinnipiac poll out of New York State, almost the same dates, October 16 to 21st, margin of error plus or minus 2.7 percent, had Obama at 52, McCain at 38. You had quite a difference, a huge lead there. So we got one polls taken over the same, more or less the same days of likely voters, one a dead heat and the other, almost a 14-point lead. So what do we, the public, to think of this polling?
Well, of course, you should be a little confused by it. That's certainly true. There are a lot of differences in the way polls are done, particularly this idea of a likely voter as a model. It's different pollsters use different models. Those models are yet to be tested. You'll have to wait till next Tuesday to find out which ones worked and which ones didn't. There are other problems, too, in terms of response rates. There's an awful lot of non-response. You are on the telephone doing a poll on a telephone. You may be looking at results based on a 10 or 15% response rate.
Mm-hmm. Well, when a pollster tries to talk about determine who is a likely voter, I mean, what are some of the criteria they might use?
Well, what did they vote last time? Mm-hmm. How intense are their views?
Mm-hmm.
People who are really strongly motivated, angry voters, concerned voters, deeply concerned voters, those are the likely to vote people.
Mm-hmm. And they had determined this by questioning in the telephone interview. Is that the idea?
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if these polls are so far apart, and they're both reliable polls, University of Cincinnati considered to be quite authoritative, Quinnipiac considered to be quite authoritative, we don't learn a great deal when one says there's a 14% advantage to Obama and the other says it's a dead heat.
Well, I happen to agree with you. I think that you have to look at more broadly across the country as well, because those are not small numbers of samples. The margin of error does not really reflect all the issues, the non-sampling issues of response rates and way the questions are worded, when the questions are asked. All those things make a big difference.
You say the way the questions are worded, for one thing.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Crucial. And you have to look at how they actually ask the questions. Those differences suggest there was some question wording differences, okay, that would have mattered too. I don't know the specifics underlying their likely voter models, so I can't answer that.
So one of the questions is who are you likely to vote for, Obama or McCain? Now, of course, even that question could be asked in different ways, I would imagine, right?
Yes, it can. Mm-hmm. And their focus is they separate the questions about are you likely to vote and who would you prefer. They usually separate those questions.
Mm-hmm.
The way you put it is a single question is not usually what's done, but it's sometimes done.
Mm-hmm. We have this, and we see it in the press, the margin of sampling error, sometimes plus or minus 3% or 4% or 2.7%. We have a race here that hypothetically candidate A is polling at 47%. Candidate B is polling at 41%. And let's say there's a 4% margin of error, plus or minus. I understand that's an 8-point possible swing for candidate A or candidate B, right? If candidate A is 47%, they could be as high as 51%. They could be as low as 43%. Is that right? So they could swing 8 points either way, each of the two candidates.
That is correct. That's very well put. The actual margin of error that you're getting is not the margin of error for the difference between the two candidates. If you want to look at the margin of error for the difference between the two candidates, you have to take the, in this case, the 4%, and you have to multiply it by the, I hate to say this, by the square root of 3, 1.73. Okay. And so it's much larger than 4%, actually, if you're looking at the difference between the candidates.
So if we have candidate A leading candidate B by 47% to 41%, and the margin of sampling error plus or minus 4%, this actually could be a very close race, because if candidate A is actually a minus 4 for 43% and candidate B is a plus 4 for 45%, candidate B is really 2 points ahead. So it's a dead heat in a sense.
In this case, you have a 7% difference. Okay, a 4% margin of error, which you have to increase by 1.73, makes it almost 6%. Makes it almost 7%. I've got to do my math here. You can't call that one.
You can't call this race. It looks like a lead, but it isn't.
Definitely really. A lead.
It's definitely a lead, but.
What happened? May I?
Yes.
What happens is you have to look over time. If they're doing repeated polls, a lot of polls are being done every day now. Mm-hmm. Gallup does every day. Many others do every day. Then you look at the trend in the polls, day-to-day trends, okay? And, in fact, the samples are getting a lot larger now because of that. And then you can say, well, the trends are this or the trends are that. Mm-hmm. The trends are in favor of Obama, or the trends are in favor of McCain, or McCain is starting to come back and creep into the lead. But looking at a single poll for a single day or a single few days, in the case the examples you gave, not good enough.
Not good enough. Look at the trend over time.
Look at the trend over time.
All right. Because, you know, of course, they naturally get reported as single polls, clearly. There's no reason why you wouldn't. Time magazine, October 22nd. In Nevada, they say Obama expanded his lead to 51% to McCain's 46%, up one percentage point from September. And they list a couple of places in which Obama is up, one percentage point. The polls have a plus or minus error of 3.5 percentage points. So 1%, that doesn't mean a thing, does it?
It's a headline, but it's not doesn't mean anything. That's right.
Okay, we're talking about political polling, public opinion polling. My guest Fritz Scheumann is vice president for statistics at the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago. We're at 614-292-8513 for your questions about political and public opinion polling, or email to openline at wosu.org. Fritz, you're going to be with us here at the Ohio State University, sponsored here this evening at 6:30.
Correct.
It's at the South Campus Gateway Landmark Movie Theater. I think everybody knows where the Landmark Movie Theater is, formerly the Drexel Theater on the South Campus Gateway. 6:30 p.m. Doors open at 6 o'clock. The title of your presentation is Trust But Verify in Elections. Tell me a little bit about that title.
Well, it's, of course, it's a line from a former president.
Yeah, President Reagan. Huh?
That's correct. But it's good advice. We think we can trust the people who are doing this, at least the public pollsters. But you have to pay attention to the details. And mm-hmm. You've asked me already several questions, which led me to talk about some details. There are still other things that are going on, which would be perhaps useful to mention. One of them is that we ourselves are doing a poll of people who have already voted.
The National Opinion Research Center.
Yes. Yeah. NORC is doing a poll here in Franklin County beginning Sunday night of a sample of people who already voted. As you know, in Ohio, in Franklin County, the names and addresses of all of the people who have already voted, it's available.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're drawing a sample of that. We've done that, and we'll begin calling them on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And we will have results on Monday early evening, on what they actually did. And our focus, I might add, is we're not in the business of looking at so-called horse race.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the business of looking at whether there were problems in the polls. where the people were having difficulties of various kinds. And that's what the focus is on. But we will ask the horse race as well.
But you'll ask the other questions about whether people had difficulties.
Well, the lines were long. I mean, this is a famous problem here from 2004. We'll be asking about that. We'll be, these are lines, of course, for people who vote early. But we'll be also continuing on with people who have voted on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. On Election Day itself, yeah.
That's right.
So, and where will we find those? We will see them in the press, undoubtedly, but you have a website.
We have a website. They'll be up on our website. I don't have the URL right at the moment. I apologize to you, but I can get that to you.
But it's the National Opinion Research Center. If we Googled that, I'm sure we definitely can.
Absolutely. And we're, of course, part of the University of Chicago, and this is a public service. We're not doing this for anything. No one's paying us. We're just doing this as a public service. It's very important for the country.
All right. Let us go to our callers here. Scott is on the air. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Fred. Good morning, Fritz.
Good morning.
My question was about you were talking about margin of error, and I wanted to know if your guest knew anything about the actual poll that takes place, the voting poll that we go to. Has there ever been a discussion or a calculation of the margin of error that takes place on that day?
When we actually go and vote on the machines.
Yes, exactly. I mean, because there are all these, like we just talked about, the lines, registration errors, and and such. That's my question.
Has that ever been expressed as a margin of error? Yeah, as to
let me can you hear me?
Yes.
Distinguish two questions. One of them is there is a lot of work done on exit polls, okay, and they have a margin of error, which is quite a bit larger than the margin of error of the pre-election polls, by the way. But the actual margin of error inside the polling place itself, this is a very interesting way of phrasing things. I don't think that has been done in a direct way. Of course, there are lots of problems with the way people vote. They don't always vote in the way they think they're voting. Even when they can check it, they don't always check it. So there's a lot of issues there. They usually would be talked about as not polling errors, but as non-sampling errors, as mistakes.
Mm-hmm. I see. But actually, what it turns out, there are several margins of error, like we just started to discuss. When people make mistakes, the administrations make mistakes with respect to the polling. And so it's just the question was brought up by something I read after the 2000 election in Florida. It was so close that really you had to take another sample because the results were within the margin of error.
I think I've heard it said, Fritz, that with the old punch card machines that we don't use anymore, that there was errors in them would generally be about 2% for one reason or another. That's the only
If you repeat the process of the election process using the same machinery or different machinery but the same process, you will get differences that are big enough to matter in close elections, and that is absolutely true. I wouldn't have called it margin of error, though.
Thank you very much.
So there are different kinds of errors that add up to what we could call informally a margin of error for
that. That is
election.
True.
Yeah.
The University of Chicago actually recounted the Florida ballots completely. Mm. And under the rules of engagement, a phrase that comes from another world, the outcome was unchanged at the end.
Unchanged.
But what was very interesting is that during that process, they ended up with teams of people who were mildly for the Republicans or mildly for the Democrats, and those teams had different answers. Hmm. If there was strongly one way or the other, then you would have expected a different answer. But even mildly, and even though they were sworn to be as nonpartisan as they could,
these are the recount teams. Physically recounted
the ballots in Florida. We did it three times.
All of them.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the differences in the count if somebody was mildly Republican or mildly Democrat.
There were teams of people. Yes, that's great. And they were in the same flavor of the callers of margin of error in a more broader sense. Not just sampling error. They mattered. We were comfortable at the end of the day that we did something that was useful, mm-hmm. And it did the official results were not changed by that process.
Bush won by
597 votes or something, some number like that.
Yeah. So it's interesting, even with people who say that we will be absolutely impartial, they interpreted the punch cards in a different way somehow?
You cannot separate what you see from how you think. Mm-hmm. It's impossible.
Yeah.
There's a lot of experiments, science experiments that bear this out. It's not just the partisanship issue. It's just human beings are not wired to be objective.
Sure. So they actually saw the punch card in a different way.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Bob is on the line. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I have two questions. The first one concerns privacy and constitutionality of polling itself. And the second one is the problem of self-validation. The first question is, when I go around and knock doors for one of the candidates, I actually do that. When the same kind of thing comes to my door, I tell them I don't divulge the information because I think it's a privacy matter. And I think we're supposed to have to keep it as a secret myself, and so it rubs me the wrong way to have to go out and do it, but it's how I help the candidate win in today's climate.
So, question.
My question then is, does the guest think it's constitutional? The second one is, to what extent is it self-validating? That means, like if you guys predicted this is a landslide, so you say, we predict the landslide and everybody stays home because they're playing free rider politics, then it might be a closer election as a result of your call.
Hmm. So any influence of political polling on the election?
I like your phrasing of free rider politics. That's a very nice phrasing. I think there is value conflicts here. That's what we have elections for, to settle issues like that. The constitutionality is maybe the easiest to address. Of course, you have a constitutional right to ask somebody else what their opinion is, and they have a constitutional right not to tell you. And that's just the way the system runs. Enough people will tell you, if you ask them in a poll, that you're able to get information that is usually useful. And that's what we are doing here with polling. If you are also an advocate for a candidate, as well as a polling, that is tougher. Okay, I really think those two roles should be separated. There is this second question that you asked about self-validation. Are you still there?
Yeah, Bob is here. Bob, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
All right.
Let me ask the second try to answer the second question about self-validating. I actually think that if the landslide is predicted, it does mildly reduce turnout. But I have to tell you that the intensity of this election is unbelievable. I mean, the R's have been told by everybody they're going to lose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if you see the rallies that they're having around the country, they're huge. Okay.
Right.
So there's something else happening here. This is just an intense moment for the country, and I hope one that we come out of with a success. Depending on who you are, it'll be you may not call it a success, but I hope we have a success. That the system worked. That's what I'm for. I'm pretty nonpartisan myself. We have this book on elections and exit polling that we just finished in honor of Warren Mottowski, who is the father of exit polling. This is a nonpartisan book, but it does give you some of the nuts and bolts of it.
Mm-hmm. I just say that it seems to me that there are two elections here. One of them is the president, and there's an indirect vote that will be very important on the West Coast, which is whether the Democrats make or don't votes in the Senate.
Mm. Whether they make that 60-vote majority in the Senate. Yeah,
so that's not on the ballot out here. So in the East, we'll be voting with that in mind, but in the West, our results will affect them if pollsters collect information about it.
Because I think the networks will not reveal exit polling, I understand, until all the polls in California are closed, right?
I don't think I know the answer to that. They will have the access will be given to the The people who are doing the polling, okay, who are most of them are friends of mine, we release the data to the media at 5 o'clock, okay, and the expectation is that the polls in a particular state have to be closed before those states' results are released.
In a particular state, okay.
I believe it's a particular state.
All right, thank you, Bob. And next caller here is Pat. Hello, Pat.
Hey, good morning. I have a little concern about the wide application of the word poll to people's opinions. Everything from the TV station that invites you to call in your opinion or, you know, vote, that doesn't seem to me to be like a poll. And then the other day I got a phone call, a robocall from this male voice who asked if I was going to vote. I mean, he characterized his questions as a poll, and then it launched onto some when I made my selection, it launched onto this diatribe about what kind of abortions this candidate would allow, and I just hung up. I was just irritated. I thought, you know, polling is sometimes, and it's a legitimate way of testing the public waters, and it irked me that this company or this organization had used the word poll.
Yeah, so Fritz, the word poll is used for a wide variety of even of campaign tactics, but we're talking about public opinion polling here that's scientific, right?
Yeah, we are. Our objective is not to get you to change your mind about something. That's campaigning. Our objective is to find out in a scientifically representative way what the public thinks. When people are asked to call in, self-selected polling, and usually a 900 number, things like that. Those are called slops. Okay, they're not useful at all, and people feel good, they want to do it, that's fine, but it's mostly useless stuff.
They don't mean anything, really.
I don't think so.
I mean, if you got if a local newspaper says, look, you know, call in your opinion, yes or no, on something,
and
the statistics you get from that don't mean anything.
They don't mean anything. They're really something else happening. The person who is actually selling you something or campaigning and calling it a poll, find out what organization that's with. If that's a from an organization that is reputable, it's wrong, and they will be chastised and sanctioned by the professionals in this world.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Pat. So, in other words, is there a formal code of ethics for scientific pollers?
There is.
Yeah.
And if people are exceeding that, then they're brought to task.
And who does that? Who censures them?
The American Association of Public Opinion Research.
Mm-hmm. They will formally censure.
Yes, they do.
Have any of the major pollsters, like Gallup, or been censured?
Not the major pollsters, but some individual pollsters have been sanctioned.
Is it ethical for a pollster to – I guess it is – to be hired by a particular candidate
of course, yeah.
Surely that's done all the time.
There's an awful lot of private polling going on, mm-hmm. issue polling. They want to find out how people think about a particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not trying to sell you the issue.
They just want to find out how you feel.
Yeah, there's another kind of polling called push polls, mm-hmm. where they're pushing a perspective on you. Those are not sanctioned. Those are not legitimate. The lady that spoke is exactly right about that.
Mm-hmm. My guest, Fritz Scheuermann, Vice President for Statistics at the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, a co-editor of the book Elections and Exit Polling. And we'll tell you more about Fritz's appearance here this evening in Columbus, which you're invited to attend free of charge after these messages at WOSU 820 NPR News.
Next time on Day to Day, forget Halloween.
Election Day is what really spooks local governments. They face record numbers of new voters.
6,000 registrations. That was just the close of registration.
Folks struggling with new voting machines.
Many voters haven't voted in at least the last 4 years.
And some big registration issues.
You know, they've got a problem.
Trying to avoid Election Day horrors.
Next time on Day to Day.
Day-to-day begins in 30 minutes. It starts at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us this morning for Open Line. I'm Amy Jarovich. Thank you to everyone who pledged their support during WOSU's recent fall membership drive. Your pledge helped make the drive a success. Your contributions keep NPR News, programs like Open Line, and classical music on the radio for all of Central Ohio. We rely on you to keep this public radio station strong and to fulfill your pledge. If you missed the chance to give, you can still do so online at WOSU.org. And thank you again for your generous support. And taking a look at the weather forecast for today, cloudy skies and a high of 48. Clear skies tonight and a low of 28, a chilly night tonight. For Thursday, warming up a little bit, mostly sunny and a high of 55. And even warmer on Friday, sunny skies on Friday and a high of 65. You're listening to Open Line on WOSU 820 NPR News, currently 43 degrees in downtown Columbus.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. We're talking about political polling here. My guest, Fritz Scheuren, is Vice President for Statistics at the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, co-editor of the book Elections and Exit Polling. We're at 614-292-8513. Emails to openline at wosu.org. Fritz, I want to mention, of course, your science cafe this evening. Everybody's invited.
Oh, yes.
6:30 in the evening tonight, right here in the South Campus Gateway Landmark Movie Theater, right on High Street there, right off High Street. 6:30 this evening, Fritz Scheuren of the National Opinion Research Center, Trust But Verify in Elections. And it's free and open to the public. And you can park in the Gateway parking ramp, sponsored by The Ohio State University. And you can park in the Gateway parking ramp for $1 for 3 hours. You can buy food and drinks at the theater, so you're all set to go there. Fritz, you wanted to mention again that you at NORC, the National Opinion Research Center, are doing some polling here in Franklin County. And you wanted to urge people to cooperate when they get that phone call that says, here, we're from the University of Chicago.
Yeah, we will be polling on Sunday night and through Tuesday. Voters in Franklin County. The early part will be polling people who we actually know have voted. We're interested in their kinds of problems that they had with when they voted. We also will ask them who they voted for, because it may well turn out, not that we're so interested in who they voted for, but we're interested in whether voters of different flavors had different problems or saw different problems. Mm-hmm. They may not have had different problems. They may just have seen different problems.
Right. Okay. And you'll publish the results on your website at the National Opinion Research Center.
On Monday.
If you Google that, you will get there. Email from Sarah. She says, please talk about the mysterious internal polling we hear so much about. I guess she means internal campaign polling, issue polling. It's simply, I guess, polling. Pollsters are hired to provide data for the campaign.
There are an awful lot of pollsters who do not put their results out on the media. They're doing it for individual campaigns, individual candidates. That's sometimes called internal polling.
Mm-hmm. And totally legitimate, and candidates
totally
and
legitimate.
Issue
yeah.
promoters want to know, right?
Yeah, unless it's push poll, which they're trying to change your opinions, that's not legitimate.
So if a pollster is hired by candidate A, an ethical pollster will not try to move results so that candidate A will find them more appealing, right? They'll try to give the straight facts.
They will test alternative ways of asking questions mm-hmm. to see if the alternative ways yield different percentages in favor of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very commonly done to frame the issue in a way that you want it framed and then use that in your campaigning later.
You point out that maybe poll watching for all of us, I mean, just for people who are interested in the election, has become sort of a national pastime. And we're waiting for the latest polls. You go to the Gallup website to look at the daily tracking poll. And
There are some people who are addicted.
Yeah.
And not just people like me. I hope they get over their addiction. The election, mercifully, will end Tuesday.
So. We hope.
Yeah, we hope. Yeah.
That it will, and everybody will be happy. We hope that that it was a fair and accurate election. Yeah. But as you point out, for those just joining us, the one poll doesn't mean much. You want to look at, let's say, if you're thinking about the presidential election, over time, what polls have to say over time.
Yeah, you want to look at the for the same polling organization over time,
mm-hmm.
And see how much the change is up or down for that organization. To the extent that they are doing it the same way, that has meaning. But the level of support is very much harder to get at right now. The trends are there, but the levels are not. Not I can't verify what the levels are.
When you say levels, you mean percentage?
If you say Obama's ahead by X and McCain is this far behind, mm-hmm. I can't really verify that right now as meaningful, because there's so many different models that are being used to determine whether people are going to vote or not.
Mm-hmm. And what are some examples of differences in models that could affect a result?
Well, there have been polls published on registered voters,
mm-hmm.
And registered voter polls are very, very big differences between registered voters and one pollster's likely voter model. But there are two reputable pollsters, mm-hmm. both with, quote, likely voter models, and giving you very different answers.
Yeah.
And they're doing it as just the story you told us early at the top of the hour here. They're giving very, very nearly the same, very, very different answers, but very nearly the same issue.
Yeah.
There's got to be something else happening. It has nothing to do with people's opinions. It's
the
way they're doing it.
Yeah, and as we pointed out at the top of the hour, a Quinnipiac poll recently had Obama leading McCain in Ohio by 14 points, but an Ohio newspaper poll from the University of Cincinnati had the race a dead heat. Polling of likely voters over almost the same days. Here's a question that's germane here, an email from a listener. How does growth in use of cell phones impact polling, and how do pollsters compensate?
Well, I think that's a very important question. First of all, early on, a couple months ago, the pollsters were not using much cell phone because cell phones are very expensive. Hard to get the cell phone numbers and costs. You have to pay the respondent because they have to pay for the cell phone time.
Yeah.
And so they wasn't doing much of it, although they were testing to see whether people who had cell phones and people who didn't, of the same, usually young people, were thinking the same way, and they were. But now it's time to fish. You know, they've cut a lot of bait. Mm-hmm. And what they are doing is a big push, big increase in cell phone usage right now, this week.
In terms of polling.
In terms of polling, yeah, because mm-hmm. they have to get information in large enough quantities about the likely young people, mostly young people, who are using cell phones. 11% of the population no longer have ordinary phones in their homes. They're using cell phones only,
mm-hmm.
And that's growing. And it's not just young people. And so that will be an important dimension. And in order to get the sample sizes large enough to be able to make reasonable statements, because this is the time when the pollsters, the next few days, the pollsters' prediction is going to count.
Yeah.
You're moving from how accurate they are, which is hard to judge, to how predictive they are. And there's a confusion about that among lay people, but mostly the early stuff is accurate. We don't know how people are going to vote. We always say, if they voted today,
yeah.
Okay. Well, they aren't voting today.
Yeah.
But pretty soon they are voting.
They are, yeah.
And so we're moving from prediction. There's still a lot of people that haven't made their mind up. It's a surprisingly large number. Well, they haven't told you what is on their mind. Maybe there's a better way of thinking.
What is that approximate number that say they
– It's about 6-7%. Usually there's – you. If you look at the you add the percentages up for Obama, say, and then plus the percentage for McCain, and the gap between that and 100% are the people who haven't made their mind up. There is some small third or fourth or fifth party voting, but that's really tiny.
So you're saying 6 or 7% are at least saying they haven't made up their mind.
Their word is saying is right, because some people just have, or they – I mean, myself on Saturday, I voted. I spent about 2 minutes there toggling back and forth as to who I was mm-hmm. going to vote for. I'm not telling you who I voted for, but mm-hmm. I was really surprised, even though I have been paying attention, that I had that last moment indecision.
With the presidential candidates?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. They're so different philosophically, I would think.
I know, but there are reasons to like both of these men.
Mm-hmm.
And I like both of them.
All right. You say it's expensive to get cell phone numbers.
Yes.
What does that mean, and how does a pollster get cell phone numbers?
Well, there are no telephone directories, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to sample, of course, any telephone number, whether it's a line phone number or not. Those are for cell phone numbers. Those are expensive, inherently expensive, because you have to call a lot more numbers to find a cell phone. People don't have their cell phones on. There are all kinds of issues. You also get lists of cell phone numbers, but they're not official lists. If you are getting a discount at a grocery, and they collect information about you, about your consumer habits, they will collect a telephone number. And if it's a cell phone number, then you've given their cell phone number away, and that may appear, be used later by a pollster.
They sell the list to the pollster.
They sell the list to any reputable organization.
Yeah. So the other thing that is, of course, you say if you call somebody a cell phone, that's at the person's expense, at cell phone holder's expense. So you say you have to pay them in some way, or
Yes, you have to reward them. I mean,
how do you do that?
You offer them a small amount of money.
You know? You call them and say, I know this is costing you money, but I'm going to send you a check for $5 or something?
Yes. That's one of the ways, yeah.
That's one of the ways to do it.
I mean, Europe, cell phone, the person who pays for the cell phone call is the caller.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, both sides pay.
Ah, okay. Is there any way, you talked about the intensity of voters on both sides in this presidential election, of Republicans and Democrat voters. Is that intensity, is there any way to, of course, that intensity could affect turnout, obviously.
Yes.
But there's no way to measure, I suppose, intensity, or is there?
Well, I mentioned earlier that the campaigns continue to draw large crowds at rallies,
mm-hmm.
not just for Obama, but also for McCain and Sarah Palin. That makes it awfully hard to measure intensity as differential
mm-hmm.
when both candidates are having large crowds.
Yeah. We have John on the line. Hi, John.
Hi. I think it's the Gallup organization, if I'm correct, that's actually reporting numbers of likely voters based on two different models, on a traditional voter model and on an enhanced turnout model.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And I think that addresses some of that. I don't know if you've already talked about the CNN poll of polls that combines together the accumulation of published polls. But I admit it. I'm addicted to polls. My name is John, and I'm addicted to polls.
Mm-hmm.
But when I looked at that this morning, I didn't realize that underneath the sort of state by state colors of the states, they actually show the polls that those composite numbers are made up of. Actually, show the questions that were asked, the number of respondents, the time period, the polling organization, and it was interesting to me looking at the polling questions how differently someone can ask exactly the same question. One of the polls for Ohio asked about Obama and Biden and asked about McCain and Palin. Another of the surveys asked just about the top of the ticket. And then the third survey asked about the Green Party and the Libertarian Party and got different answers based on the different questions that they asked. And I thought it was very interesting. Even if you're doing a professional poll and even if you're trying to do everything right, just how different the results can be just based on some subtleties like that.
Surely. Fritz?
And they do. The differences are really important. I'm glad, John, that you you noticed that. I like the CNN poll of the polls. I would present the results a little differently because I want to track individual pollsters' change, okay, individually, not just aggregate them up over a particular time period. But this work by CNN is extremely well done, and I actually know the statistician at CNN who's doing this. His name is Clyde Tucker. I used to be president of the American Cisco Association a few years ago. He's running for president next year, so you can vote for him if you like him.
if you talk to Mr. Tucker, tell him that his work is appreciated by the people using it.
I will tell him that.
Thank you, John. Thanks for your
call. Thank you.
My guest, Fritz Scheuren, is Vice President for Statistics at the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, co-editor of the book Elections and Exit Polling. Once again, this evening, 6:30, sponsored a science cafe sponsored by The Ohio State University, 6:30 this evening. Everybody's welcome to come, and the doors open at 6 o'clock. At the Gateway Landmark Movie Theater at the South Campus Gateway, just off High Street, 6:30 this evening with Fritz Scheuren, Trust But Verify in Elections. You know, Fritz, we see there's a website called pollster.com, and you see they have the electoral map, and they have right now Obama at 255 electoral votes solid, they say. And McCain at a great deal fewer. If that were accurate, you would say, well, Obama has only 15 more electoral votes to gain, and there are a number of toss-up states, and they have a number of states leaning toward Obama. So you, if you looked at that, you'd say, well, gee, he's almost got the election in the bag. But that can't be true. So how should we look at these electoral maps that with the solid colors and the leaning colors on various websites?
Well, I think pollster.com does a very good job. I really like those people. But your point of view is correct. One of the things that's I've already said earlier is it's those are as of today or as of the day that they were done. And this is a very changing landscape here. There are a lot of people who haven't made their minds up yet. Even some of the solids may not be solid, okay? Although it's clearly Obama's ahead. I mean, there isn't any doubt about that. But whether he's ahead enough to for us to go home and not vote, I don't think so.
He's ahead today.
He's ahead today, exactly. Yeah.
Today only.
Today only. I would love to find out what my sons did on Saturday. I don't think they voted the same way. We don't talk about politics. My wife's very intensely political, so
you stay away from it, yeah?
Yeah.
Right. We have another caller, John. Hi, John.
Fred, good to see you, or hear you guys. I had a quick question about the accuracy of voting early. If there's any legitimate hesitation that voters should have on their vote getting counted or it being somehow mysteriously lost in the mail somewhere.
Well, it does depend on how you vote early. In Franklin County, you can as I've been studying this, you can vote by mail and you can also walk in and vote. And I think that the voting electronically, voting yourself, is intuitively more satisfying, but I think that the voting by mail is going to be very solid. And after all, Oregon and Washington, most of Washington State, all of Oregon, vote by mail, and it's quite effective.
Yeah, Franklin County officials tell us that they feel very secure that there will be an accurate count of those who vote by mail. Yeah,
and the advantage of voting by mail is you get to think about it a little bit more, and you don't get in the long lines.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John, thanks for your question. We have yet another John on the line. Hello.
Hi, Fred. I'd like to ask your guest in layman's terms to talk about the accuracy levels of the results of polling and to distinguish between reliability and validity. Can you say more about that?
Well, validity is going to be tested on Election Day, I guess. Reliability is what we've been talking about primarily, whether they're doing it the same way over and over again. And that is not so obvious when you're mixing in different polls and not telling us which polls they're coming from. I think that you should be comparing a poll to itself at a previous time. That's not a hard and fast rule, but I really recommend it. And when you take a poll, a Gallup poll, and mix it in with someone else's poll, and you're going to get different answers just because you're using different early voter model. Excuse me, different likely voter models.
Mm-hmm.
My question really goes to validity. What populations are being tested, and how are the polls being made, or what are the questions being asked? The 2 or 3 percentage points in statistical reliability really have to do with reliability and not the validity. That is, whether or not the whole population is being tested accurately.
I agree with you, John. We're looking if there you just heard the host here talk about different ways of asking questions, and those are not necessarily they don't have the same degree of validity, but they could have the same degree of reliability,
yeah.
Repeatability. We don't really know the answer to that question, and we probably won't know until Election Day.
Right. I just think now and then reminding the public of the difficulty of polling is important as well as the.
Sure.
You've done a good job of that, John. Thank you.
John, thanks for your call. So one pollster is building a national sample. I mean, in other words, one poll here called the Ohio newspaper poll 886. Well, this is in Ohio, 886 likely voters. In addition to the quality of likelihood of voting, what are some of the other things you do in building a statistical sample?
Well, if you're doing it on the telephone, there are very well-established methods to draw samples state by state, or nationally, or combine them. There's not a country where the national sample is all that meaningful, actually. It's state by state, because that's how the system works.
Because of the electoral college system, yeah.
And that puts extra pressure on the pollsters, because while some states, like New York, California, you don't need to do a lot of polling, you already know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
In other states, not so big, Virginia, for example, or states like Ohio, pretty big, but very close, you have to spend a lot of money to get good data.
When you start to sample, do you say, well, we want such and such a percentage of Republicans, Democrats, Independents, we want such and such a percentage of certain age groups, over 65, 18 to 20, I mean, ethnic and racial as well? I mean, what goes into the sample?
Let me if you do a random sample on the telephone,
mm-hmm.
you don't know who's going to pick the phone up.
Right.
Okay, you know what zip code they're in, perhaps, but that's about it. And you have to ask questions about that would characterize them by their age, by their ethnicity, gender, previous election experiences. And then when you get all, if you have a large enough sample and carefully done so that the respondents are a high percentage of the people you called, then. It'll be a valid result, but you can weight it up, tune it up to get rid of any extra problems. Sometimes in these polls, there are too many women. It's particularly a common on the telephone that a woman is answering the phone more than a man. She's home more of the time, and so you're going to have too many women. So you have to adjust for that.
Mm-hmm. We hear a little bit of conversation about the so-called Bradley effect, in which allegedly some white voters will lie to pollsters and say they're going to vote for an African-American candidate for an office when, in fact, they have no intention of doing that. But the question I have about that is why would somebody on the phone lie to a pollster? I mean, it's equally reputable to vote for Senator McCain or Senator Obama. Why would somebody lie? On what basis?
Well, people have to – sometimes aren't willing to face their own views of themselves, okay? So they, mm-hmm. They won't tell you. But I think it's not people saying they're going to vote for McCain when they want to go for Obama. I don't think that's what's probably happening. Could be. I think it's more likely they're not going to tell you the answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I when I look at the people that are still undecided, I wonder how many of them are actually not going to vote for Obama. You cannot right now say split them equally based on the mm-hmm. percentage that have already stated their vote for Obama or McCain. That would not be the right answer.
Why would some people be reluctant to tell you who they're going to vote for?
I didn't answer that, did I? They're worried that you're going to chastise them for not having got with the program here in this country of putting race behind us, okay, or gender behind us.
So they would think that somehow you would think ill of them if they
– That's correct.
That's very interesting.
And there are a lot of people who would think ill of them.
In these polls in which you ask the presidential preference, is it in somewhere in the questioning down the line, do you generally ask whether the Republican, Democrat, or Independent as well?
Yes, you do. Yeah.
Well, in that case, I can see maybe a Democrat who did not intend to vote for Obama might think, gee, if I say I'm going to vote for McCain and then you ask me if I'm a Democrat and I say I'm a Democrat, then I'm going to be thought to be racist. Thought to be is the operative word, huh?
A lot of people's party affiliation is traditional and not related to their voting preferences at presidential times. I mean, a lot of people in the South, in Florida, for example, are still registered as Democrats. Mm-hmm. And they haven't been voting Democrat for a long time mm-hmm. in presidential elections.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Brian. He says, some polls are conducted such that a small number of people are contacted. Where is the accuracy when a mere 1,000 people are polled? Why not a series of comprehensive polls with 10,000 people over time? I guess people do say with 1,000 people contacted nationally, there's some accuracy to that poll. Huh?
Well, the margin of error, we've been talking about the margin of error, is a little bigger than 3% on a poll of 1,000 people. That's pretty good if you are trying to get a general understanding. But it's perhaps not good enough. A sample of 10,000 is certainly a lot better. It doesn't turn out to be 10 times better. It turns out to be the square root of 10 times better because you don't get as much with a bigger sample as you would like. You spend the money, but you don't get it. Mm-hmm. The key issue is state by state, though. Mm-hmm. And with a sample of 1,000, you cannot do state by state.
Sure. Now, exit polling. Polling of people coming out of the booth to figure out the way they voted. And the networks often will call a state on the basis of a certain number of exit polls that they make. They'll say, this state is going McCain or this state is going Obama. But isn't that going to be harder to do now because so many people have voted in advance and you're not going to necessarily have that information?
That's true. And so what is being done, and we're doing it here in Franklin County as well, is that you call people on the phone. Okay. We have a list of people who have already voted. Mm-hmm. That's a public list, and it's available on the website, and we're using that to call people.
Mm-hmm. Well, will the networks have that information too? Will they have the information about early voters?
Well, I think some of the networks are still just using random digit dialing. They're just calling random people and asking if they voted. One of the people that for big networks, I was explaining that how easy it was to do this efficiently in Ohio. They didn't know that. They were calling using random digit dialing. So they're doing it, but it's much more expensive.
Mm-hmm. And generally, have the networks, with one maybe a famous exception in 2000, at least in terms of awarding a state to a particular candidate during the evening, generally pretty accurate on the basis of this exit polling. Is that right?
That is correct. The problem in 2000, of course, was they called the election before the polls were closed in Florida. They didn't realize Florida has two time zones.
Mm-hmm.
It was rather embarrassing to them.
Yeah.
It probably affected the outcome even, but there were so many things that went wrong in Florida in 2000, I'm not going to list them all.
Well, let's say in the final minute here, my guest, Fritz Scheuren, Vice President for Statistics at the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, which may be calling you here in Franklin County polling. But we also want to say this evening, 6:30, a science cafe sponsored by the Ohio State University, 6:30 this evening at the South Campus Gateway Landmark Movie Theater with Fritz Scheuren. The doors open at 6 o'clock, but it starts at 6:30. The title, Trust But Verify in Elections. All these and more questions that we've covered during the hour, many more questions. And Fritz, you'll be there to answer questions and talk to the people as well. Everybody is welcome.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me.
Fritz Scheuren, thanks very much for being with us this hour. The news is next on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.